Drizzt, whatever his wounds, did not even cry out, but moved back into position and started concentrating all over again. "He is young for that," came a comment from behind Vierna. She turned in her seat to see Brisa standing over her, a customary scowl on the older sister's face. "Perhaps," Vierna replied. "But I'll not know until I let him try."
"Whip him when he fails," Brisa suggested, pulling her cruel six-headed instrument from her belt.
She gave the whip a loving look, as if it was some sort of pet, and let a snake's head writhe about her neck and face.
"Inspiration."
"Put it away," Vierna retorted. "Drizzt is mine to rear, and I need no help from you."
"You should watch how you speak to a high priestess," Brisa warned.
And all of the snakeheads, extensions of her thoughts, turned menacingly toward Vierna. "As Matron Malice will watch how you interfere with my tasks," Vierna was quick to reply. Brisa put her whip away at the mention of Matron Malice.
"Your tasks," she echoed scornfully. "You are too yielding for such a chore. Male children must be disciplined. They must be taught their place."
Realizing that Vierna's threat held dire consequences, the older sister turned and left. Vierna let Brisa have the last word. The ween mother looked back to Drizzt, still trying to get up to the statue. "Enough," she ordered, recognizing that the child was tiring. He could barely get his feet off the ground.
"I will do it,"
Drizzt snapped back at her. Vierna liked his determination, but not the tone of his reply. Perhaps there was some truth to Brisa's words. Vierna snapped the snake-headed whip from her belt. A little inspiration might go a long way. Vierna sat in the chapel the next day, watching Drizzt hard at work polishing the statue of the naked female. He had levitated the full 20 feet in his first attempt this day. Vierna could not help but be disappointed when Drizzt did not look back to her and smile at the success. She saw him now, hovering up in the air, his hands a blur as they worked the brushes. Most vividly of all, though, Vierna saw the scars on her brother's naked back, the legacy of their inspirational discussion. In the infrared spectrum, the whip lines showed clearly, trails of warmth where the insulating layers of skin had been stripped away. Vierna understood the gain in beating a child, particularly a male child. Few drow males ever raised a weapon against a female, unless under the order of some other female. How much do we lose? Vierna wondered aloud. What more could one such as Drizzt become? When she heard the words spoken aloud, Vierna quickly brushed the blasphemous thoughts from her mind. She aspired to become a high priestess of the Spider Queen, Lolth the Merciless. Such thoughts were not in accord with the rules of her station. She cast an angry glare on her little brother, transferring her guilt, and again took out her instrument of punishment. She would have to whip Drizzt again this day, for the sacrilegious thoughts he had inspired within her. So the relationship continued for another 5 years, with Drizzt learning the basic lessons of life in drow society while endlessly cleaning the chapel of House Doerden. Beyond the supremacy of female drow, a lesson always accentuated by the wicked snake-headed whip, the most compelling lessons were those concerning the surface elves, the fairies. Evil empires often bound themselves in webs of hate toward fabricated enemies, and none in the history of the world were better at it than the drow. From the first day they were able to understand the spoken word, drow children were taught that whatever was wrong in their lives could be blamed on the surface elves. Whenever the fangs of Vierna's whip sliced into Drizzt's back, he cried out for the death of a fairy. Conditioned hatred was rarely a rational emotion. Part 2. The Weapons Master. Empty hours, empty days. I find that I have few memories of that first period of my life, those first 16 years when I labored as a servant. Minutes blended into hours, hours into days, and so on, until the whole of it seemed one long and barren moment. Several times I managed to sneak out onto the balcony of House Doerden, and look out over the magical lights of Menzo Berenzon. On all of those secret journeys, I found myself entranced by the growing and dissipating heat light of Narbindel, the time clock pillar. Looking back on that now, on those long hours watching the glow of the wizard's fire slowly walk its way up and down the pillar, I am amazed at the emptiness of my early days. I clearly remember my excitement, tingling excitement, each time I got out of the house and set myself into position to observe the pillar. Such a simple thing it was, yet so fulfilling compared to the rest of my existence. Whenever I hear the crack of a whip, another memory, more a sensation than a memory, actually, sends a shiver through my spine. The shocking jolt and the ensuing numbness from those snake-headed weapons is not something that any person would soon forget. They bite under your skin, sending waves of magical energy through your body, waves that make your muscles snap and pull beyond their limits. Yet I was luckier than most. My sister Vierna was near to becoming a high priestess when she was assigned the task of rearing me, and was at a period of her life where she possessed far more energy than such a job required. Perhaps, then, there was more to those first 10 years under her care than I now recall. Vierna never showed the intense wickedness of our mother, or more particularly of our oldest sister, Brisa. Perhaps there were good times in the solitude of the house chapel. It is possible that Vierna allowed a more gentle side of herself to show through to her baby brother. Maybe not. Even though I count Vierna as the kindest of my sisters, her words drip in the venom of Lolth as surely as those of any cleric in Menzo Berenzon. It seems unlikely that she would risk her aspirations toward high priestesshood for the sake of a mere child, a mere male child. Whether there were indeed joys in those years, obscured in the unrelenting assault of Menzo Berenzon's wickedness, or whether that earliest period of my life was even more painful than the years that followed, so painful that my mind hides the memories, I cannot be certain. For all my efforts, I cannot remember them. I have more insight into the next 6 years, but the most prominent recollection of the days I spent serving the court of Matron Malice, aside from the secret trips outside the house, is the image of my own feet. A page prince is never allowed to raise his gaze. Drizzt Do'Urden. 6. Two Hands. Drizzt promptly answered the call to his matron mother's side, not needing the whip Brisa used to hurry him along. How often he had felt the sting of that dreaded weapon. Drizzt held no thoughts of revenge against his vicious older sister. With all of the conditioning he had received, he feared the consequences of striking her, or any female, far too much to entertain such notions. "Do you know what this day marks?" Malice asked him as he arrived at the side of her great throne in the chapel's darkened anteroom. "No, Matron Mother," Drizzt answered, unconsciously keeping his gaze on his toes. A resigned sigh rose in his throat as he noticed the unending view of his own feet. There had to be more to life than black stone and 10 wiggling toes, he thought. He slipped one foot out of his low boot and began doodling on the stone floor. Body heat left discernible tracings in the infrared spectrum, and Drizzt was quick and agile enough to complete simple drawings before the initial lines had cooled. 16 years, Matron Malice said to him. "You have breathed the air of Menzo Berenzon for 16 years. An important period of your life has passed." Drizzt did not react, did not see any importance or significance to the declaration. His life was an unending and unchanging routine. One day, 16 years, what difference did it make? If his mother considered important the things he had been put through since his earliest recollections, Drizzt shuddered to think of what the next decades might hold. He had nearly completed his picture of a round-shouldered drow, Brisa, being bitten on the behind by an enormous viper. "Look at me," Matron Malice commanded. Drizzt felt at a loss.
His natural tendency once had been to look upon a person with whom he was talking, but Breeza had wasted no time in beating that instinct out of him. The place of a page prince was servitude, and the only eyes of page princes were worthy of meeting were those of the creatures that scurried across the stone floor, except the eyes of a spider, of course. Drizzt had to avert his gaze whenever one of the eight-legged things crawled into his vision. Spiders were too good for the likes of a page prince. "Look at me," Malice said again, her tone hinting at volatile impatience. Drizzt had witnessed the explosions before, a wrath so incredibly vile that it swept aside anything and everything in its path. Even Breeza, so pompous and cruel, ran for hiding when the matron mother grew angry. Drizzt forced his gaze up tentatively, scanning his mother's black robes, using the familiar spider pattern along the garment's back and sides to judge the angle of his gaze. He fully expected, as every inch passed, a smack on his head or a lashing on his back. Breeza was behind him, always with her snake-headed whip near her anxious hand. Then he saw her. The mighty Matron Malice Doerden, her heat-sensing eyes flashing red and her face cool, not flushed with angry heat. Drizzt kept tense, still expecting a punishing blow. "Your tenure as page prince is ended," Malice explained. "You are second boy of House Doerden now, and are accorded all the—" Drizzt's gaze unconsciously slipped back to the floor. "Look at me!" his mother screamed in sudden rage. Terrified, Drizzt snapped his gaze back to her face, which now was glowing a hot red. On the edge of his vision he saw the wavering heat of Malice's swinging hand, though he was not foolish enough to try to dodge the blow. He was on the floor then, the side of his face bruised. Even in the fall, though, Drizzt was alert and wise enough to keep his gaze locked onto that of Matron Malice. "No more a servant," the matron mother roared. "To continue acting like one would bring disgrace to our family." She grabbed Drizzt by the throat and dragged him roughly to his feet. "If you dishonor House Doerden," she promised, her face an inch from his, "I will put needles into your purple eyes." Drizzt didn't blink. In the 6 years since Vierna had relinquished care of him, putting him into general servitude to all the family, he had come to know Matron Malice well enough to understand all of the subtle connotations of her threats. She was his mother, for whatever that was worth, but Drizzt did not doubt that she would enjoy sticking needles in his eyes. "This one is different," Vierna said, in more than the shade of his eyes. "In what way, then?" Zaknafane asked, trying to keep his curiosity at a professional level. Zack had always liked Vierna better than the others, but she recently had been ordained a high priestess and had since become too eager for her own good. Vierna slowed the pace of her gait. The door to the chapel's antechamber was in sight now. "It is hard to say," she admitted. "Drizzt is as intelligent as any male child I have ever known. He could levitate by the age of 5. Yet after he became the page prince, it took 10 days of punishment to teach him the duty of keeping his gaze to the floor, as if such a simple act ran unnaturally counter to his constitution." Zaknafane paused and let Vierna move ahead of him. "Unnatural?" he whispered under his breath, considering the implications of Vierna's observations. Unusual, perhaps, for a drow, but exactly what Zaknafane would expect and hope for from a child of his loins. He moved behind Vierna into the lightless anteroom. Malice, as always, sat in her throne at the head of the spider idol, but all the other chairs in the room had been moved to the walls, even though the entire family was present. This was to be a formal meeting, Zack realized, for only the matron mother was accorded the comfort of a seat. "Matron Malice," Vierna began in her most reverent voice, "I present to you Zaknafane, as you requested." Zack moved up beside Vierna and exchanged nods with Malice, but he was more intent on the youngest Doerden, standing naked to the waist at the matron mother's side. Malice held up one hand to silence the others, then motioned for Breeza, holding a house powafwi, to continue. An expression of elation brightened Drizzt's childish face as Breeza, chanting through the appropriate incantations, placed the magical cloak, black and shot with streaks of purple and red, over his shoulders.
"Greetings, Zachnefane Doerden,"
Drizzt said heartily, drawing stunned looks from all in the room. Matron Malice had not granted him privilege to speak. He hadn't even asked her permission.
"I am Drizzt, second boy of House Doerden, no more the Page Prince. I can look at you now. I mean at your eyes and not your boots. Mother told me so."
Drizzt's smile disappeared when he looked up at the burning scowl of Matron Malice. Vierna stood as if turned to stone, her jaw hanging open and her eyes wide in disbelief. Zack, too, was amazed, but in a different manner. He brought a hand up to pinch his lips together, to prevent them from spreading into a smile that would have inevitably erupted into belly-shaking laughter. Zack couldn't remember the last time he had seen the matron mother's face so very bright. Breeza, in her customary position behind Malice, fumbled with her whip, too confounded by her young brother's actions to even know what in the nine hells she should do. This was a first, Zack knew, for Malice's eldest daughter rarely hesitated when punishment was in order. At the matron's side, but now prudently a step farther away, Drizzt quieted and stood perfectly still, biting down on his bottom lip. Zack could see, though, that the smile remained in the young drow's eyes. Drizzt's informality and disrespect of station had been more than an unconscious slip of the tongue, and more than the innocence of inexperience. The weapons master took a long step forward to deflect the matron mother's attention from Drizzt.
"Second boy?" he asked, sounding impressed, both for the sake of Drizzt's swelling pride and to placate and distract Malice. "Then it is time for you to train."
Malice let her anger slip away, a rare event.
"Only the basics at your hands, Zachnefane. If Drizzt is to replace Nalfane, his place at the academy will be in Sorcerer. Thus the bulk of his preparation will fall upon Risen and his knowledge, limited though it may be, of the magical arts."
"Are you so certain that wizardry is his lot, matron?" Zack was quick to ask.
"He appears intelligent," Malice replied. She shot an angry glare at Drizzt. "At least some of the time. Vierna reported great progress with his command of the innate powers. Our house needs a new wizard."
Malice snarled reflexively, reminded of Matron Bayenry's pride in her wizard son, the Archmage of the city. It had been 16 years since Malice's meeting with the first matron mother of Menzo Baranzon, but she had never forgotten even the tiniest detail of that encounter.
"Sorcerer seems the natural course."
Zack took a flat coin from his neck purse, flipped it into a spin, and snatched it out of the air.
"Might we see?" he asked.
"As you will,"
Malice agreed, not surprised at Zack's desire to prove her wrong. Zack placed little value in wizardry, preferring the hilt of a blade to the crystal rod component of a lightning bolt. Zack moved to stand before Drizzt and handed him the coin.
"Flip it."
Drizzt shrugged, wondering what this vague conversation between his mother and the weapons master was all about. Until now, he had heard nothing of any future profession being planned for him, or of this place called Sorcerer. With a consenting shrug of his shoulders, he slid the coin onto his curled index finger and snapped it into the air with his thumb, easily catching it. He then held it back out to Zack and gave the weapons master a confused look, as if to ask what was so important about such an easy task. Instead of taking the coin, the weapons master pulled another from his neck purse.
"Try both hands," he said to Drizzt, handing it to him.
Drizzt shrugged again, and in one easy motion put the coins up and caught them. Zack turned an eye on Matron Malice. Any drow could have performed that feat, but the ease with which this one executed the catch was a pleasure to observe. Keeping a sly eye on the matron, Zack produced two more coins.
"Stack two on each hand and send all four up together," he instructed Drizzt.
Four coins went up. Four coins were caught. The only parts of Drizzt's body that had even flinched were his arms.
"Two hands," Zack said to Malice. "This one is a fighter. He belongs in Melee MacVeer."
"I have seen wizards perform such feats,"
Malice retorted, not pleased by the look of satisfaction on the troublesome weapons master's face. Zack once had been Malice's proclaimed husband, and quite often since that distant time she took him as her lover. His skills and agility were not confined to the use of weapons. But along with the pleasures that Zack Nafane gave to Malice, sensual skills that had prompted Malice to spare Zack's life on more than a dozen occasions, came a multitude of headaches. He was the finest weapons master in Menzo Baranzon, another fact that Malice could not ignore. But his disdain, even contempt for the Spider Queen, had often landed House Doerden into trouble. Zack handed two more coins to Drizzt. Now enjoying the game, Drizzt put them into motion. Six went up, six came down, the correct three landing in each hand.
Two hands, Zack said more emphatically.
Matron Malice motioned for him to continue, unable to deny the grace of her youngest son's display.
Could you do it again? Zack asked Drizzt.
With each hand working independently, Drizzt soon had the coins stacked atop his index fingers, ready to flip. Zack stopped him there and pulled out four more coins, building each of the piles five high. Zack paused a moment to study the concentration of the young drow, and also to keep his hands over the coins and ensure that they were brightened enough by the warmth of his body heat for Drizzt to properly see them in their flight.
"Catch them all, second boy," he said in all seriousness. "Catch them all, or you will land in Sorcerer, the school of magic. That is not where you belong."
Drizzt still had only a vague idea of what Zack was talking about, but he could tell from the weapons master's intensity that it must be important. He took a deep breath to steady himself, then snapped the coins up. He sorted their glow quickly, discerning each individual item. The first two fell easily into his hands, but Drizzt saw that the scattering pattern of the rest would not drop them so readily in line. Drizzt exploded into action, spinning a complete circle, his hands an indecipherable blur of motion. Then he straightened suddenly and stood before Zack. His hands were in fists at his sides, and a grim look lay on his face. Zack and Matron Malice exchanged glances, neither quite sure of what had happened. Drizzt held his fists out to Zack, and slowly opened them, a confident smile widening across his childish face. Five coins in each hand. Zack blew a silent whistle. It had taken him, the weapons master of the house, a dozen tries to complete that maneuver with 10 coins. He walked over to Matron Malice.
"Two hands," he said a third time.
"He is a fighter, and I am out of coins." How many could he do? Malice breathed, obviously impressed in spite of herself.
"How many could we stack?"
Zack Nafane shot back with a triumphant smile. Matron Malice chuckled out loud and shook her head. She had wanted Drizzt to replace Nalfane as the house wizard, but her stubborn weapons master had, as always, deflected her course.
"Very well, Zack Nafane," she said, admitting her defeat. "The second boy is a fighter."
Zack nodded and started back to Drizzt.
"Perhaps one day soon to be the weapons master of House Doerden," Matron Malice added to Zack's back.
Her sarcasm stopped Zack short, and he eyed her over his shoulder.
"With this one," Matron Malice continued wryly, wrenching back the upper hand with her usual lack of shame, "could we expect anything less?"
Risen, the present patron of the family, shifted uncomfortably. He knew, and so did everyone, even the slaves of House Doerden, that Drizzt was not his child.
"Three rooms?" Drizzt asked, when he and Zack entered the large training hall at the southernmost end of the Doerden complex. Balls of multicolored magical light had been spaced along the length of the high-ceilinged stone room, basking the entirety in a comfortably dim glow. The hall had only three doors, one to the east, which led to an outer chamber that opened onto the balcony of the house, one directly across from Drizzt, on the south wall, leading into the last room in the house, and the one from the main hallway that they had just passed through. Drizzt knew from the many locks Zack was now fastening behind them that he wouldn't often be going back that way.
"One room," Zack corrected.
"But two more doors," Drizzt reasoned, looking out across the room,
with no locks.
Ah, Zack corrected. Their locks are made of common sense.
Drizzt was beginning to get the picture. That door, Zack continued, pointing to the south, opens into my private chambers. You do not ever want me to find you in there. The other one leads to the tactics room, reserved for times of war. When, if, you ever prove yourself to my satisfaction, I might invite you to join me there. That day is years away, so consider this single magnificent hall, he swept his arm out in a wide arc, your home.
Drizzt looked around, not overly thrilled. He had dared to hope that he had left this kind of treatment behind him with his page prince days. This setup, though, brought him back even to before his 6 years of servitude in the house, back to that decade when he had been locked away in the family chapel with Vierna. This room wasn't even as large as the chapel, and was too tight for the likings of the spirited young drow. His next question came out as a growl.
Where do I sleep?
Your home, Zack answered matter-of-factly.
Where do I take meals?
Your home. Drizzt's eyes narrowed to slits, and his face flushed in glowing heat.
Where do I...
he began stubbornly, determined to foil the weapons master's logic.
Your home. Zack replied in the same measured and weighted timbre before Drizzt could finish the thought.
Drizzt planted his feet firmly and crossed his arms over his chest.
It sounds messy, he growled.
It had better not be, Zack growled back.
Then what is the purpose? Drizzt began. You pull me away from my mother.
You will address her as Matron Malice, Zack warned. You will always address her as Matron Malice.
From my mother.
Zack's next interruption came not with words, but with the swing of a curled fist. Drizzt awoke about 20 minutes later.
First lesson, Zack explained, casually leaning against the wall a few feet away. For your own good, you will always address her as Matron Malice.
Drizzt rolled to his side and tried to prop himself up on his elbow, but found his head reeling as soon as it left the black-rugged floor. Zack grabbed him and hoisted him up.
Not as easy as catching coins, the weapons master remarked.
What?
Parrying a blow.
What blow?
Just agree, you stubborn child.
Second boy, Drizzt corrected, his voice again a growl, and his arms defiantly back over his chest.
Zack's fist curled at his side, a not too subtle point that Drizzt did not miss.
Do you need another nap? The weapons master asked calmly.
Second boys can be children, Drizzt wisely conceded.
Zack shook his head in disbelief. This was going to be interesting.
You may find your time here enjoyable, he said, leading Drizzt over to a long, thick, and colorfully, though most of the colors were somber, decorated curtain. But only if you can learn some control over that wagging tongue of yours.
A sharp tug sent the curtain floating down, revealing the most magnificent weapons rack the young drow, and many older drow as well, had ever seen. Pole arms of many sorts, swords, axes, hammers, and every other kind of weapon Drizzt could imagine, and a whole bunch he'd never imagine, sat in an elaborate array.
Examine them, Zack told him. Take your time and your pleasure. Learn which ones sit best in your hands. Follow most obediently the commands of your will. By the time we have finished, you will know every one of them as a trusted companion.
Wide-eyed, Drizzt wandered along the rack, viewing the whole place and the potential of the whole experience in a completely different light. For his entire young life, 16 years, his greatest enemy had been boredom. Now, it appeared, Drizzt had found weapons to fight that enemy. Zack headed for the door to his private chamber, thinking it better that Drizzt be alone in those first awkward moments of handling new weapons. The weapons master stopped, though, when he reached his door and looked back to the young Dewarden. Drizzt swung a long and heavy halberd, a pole arm more than twice his height, in a slow arc. For all of Drizzt's attempts to keep the weapon under control, its momentum spun his tiny frame right to the ground. Zack heard himself chuckle, but his laughter only reminded him of the grim reality of his duty. He would train Drizzt, as he had trained 1,000 young Dark Elves before him, to be a warrior, preparing him for the trials of the Academy and life in dangerous Menzo Berenzon. He would train Drizzt to be a killer. How against this one's nature that mantle seemed, thought Zack. Smiles came too easily to Drizzt. The thought of him running a sword through the heart of another living being revolted Zack Nefane. That was the way of the drow, though, a way that Zack had been unable to resist for all of his 4 centuries of life. Pulling his stare from the spectacle of Drizzt at play, Zack moved into his chamber and shut the door.
"Are they all like that?" he asked into his nearly empty room. "Do all drow children possess such innocence, such simple, untainted smiles that cannot survive the ugliness of our world?"
Zack started for the small desk to the side of the room, meaning to lift the darkening shade off the continually glowing ceramic globe that served as the chamber's light source. He changed his mind as that image of Drizzt's delight with the weapons refused to diminish, and he headed instead for the large bed across from the door.
"Or are you unique, Drizzt O'Erden?" he continued as he fell onto the cushioned bed. "And if you are so different, what then is the cause? The blood? My blood that courses through your veins? Or the years you spent with your ween mother?"
Zack threw an arm across his eyes and considered the many questions. Drizzt was different from the norm, he decided at length. But he didn't know whether he should thank Vierna or himself. After a while, sleep took him, but it brought the weapons master little comfort. A familiar dream visited him, a vivid memory that would never fade. Zack Nefane heard again the screams of the children of House de Vere as the Doherden soldiers, soldiers he himself had trained, slashed at them.
"This one is different," Zack cried, leaping up from his bed. He wiped the cold sweat from his face. "This one is different." He had to believe that.
7. Dark Secrets.
"Do you truly mean to try?" Massage asked, his voice condescending and filled with disbelief. Alton turned his hideous glare on the student.
"Direct your anger elsewhere, faceless one," Massage said, averting his gaze from his mentor's scarred visage.
"I am not the cause of your frustration. The question was valid."
"For more than a decade, you have been a student of the magical arts," Alton replied. "Still you fear to explore the netherworld at the side of a master of sorcerer."
"I would have no fear beside a true master," Massage dared to whisper.
Alton ignored the comment, as he had with so many others he had accepted from the apprenticing Hunnet over the last 16 years. Massage was Alton's only tie to the outside world, and while Massage had a powerful family, Alton had only Massage. They moved through the door into the uppermost chamber of Alton's 4-room complex. A single candle burned there, its light diminished by an abundance of dark-colored tapestries and the black hue of the room's stone and rugs. Alton slid onto his stool at the back of the small circular table and placed a heavy book down before him.
"It is a better spell left for clerics," Massage protested, sitting down across from the faceless master. "Wizards command the lower planes. The dead are for the clerics alone."
Alton looked around curiously, then turned a frown up at Massage, the master's grotesque features enhanced by the dancing candlelight.
"It seems that I have no cleric at my call," the faceless one explained sarcastically. "Would you rather I try for another denizen of the 9 hells?
Massage rocked back in his chair and shook his head helplessly and emphatically. Alton had a point. A year before, the faceless one had sought answers to his questions by enlisting the aid of an ice devil. The volatile thing froze the room until it shone black in the infrared spectrum and smashed a matron mother's treasure hoard worth of alchemical equipment. If Massage hadn't summoned his magical cat to distract the ice devil, neither he nor Alton would have gotten out of the room alive.
"Very well, then,"
Massage said unconvincingly, crossing his arms in front of him on the table.
Conjure your spirit and find your answers.
Alton did not dismiss the involuntary shudder belied by the ripple in Massage's robes. He glared at the student for a moment, then went back to his preparations. As Alton neared the time of casting, Massage's hand instinctively went into his pocket, to the onyx figurine of the hunting cat he had acquired on the day Alton had assumed the Faceless One's identity. The little statue was enchanted with a powerful Dwyamer that enabled its possessor to summon a mighty panther to his side. Massage had used the cat sparingly, not yet fully understanding the Dwyamer's limitations and potential dangers. Only in times of need, Massage reminded himself quietly when he felt the item in his hand. Why was it that those times kept occurring when he was with Alton? The apprentice wondered. Despite his bravado, this time Alton privately shared Massage's trepidation. Spirits of the dead were not as destructive as denizens of the lower planes, but they could be equally cruel and subtler in their torments. Alton needed his answer, though. For more than a decade and a half, he had sought his information through conventional channels, inquiring of masters and students, in a roundabout manner, of course, of the details concerning the fall of House de Vere. Many knew the rumors of that eventful night. Some even detailed the battle methods used by the victorious house. None, though, would name that perpetrating house. In Menzo Berenzon, one did not utter anything resembling an accusation, even if the belief was commonly shared, without enough undeniable proof to spur the ruling council into a unified action against the accused. If a house botched a raid and was discovered, the wrath of all Menzo Berenzon would descend upon it until the family name had been extinguished. But in the case of a successfully executed attack, such as the one that felled House de Vere, an accuser was the one most likely to wind up at the wrong end of a snake-headed whip. Public embarrassment, perhaps more than any guidelines of honor, turned the wheels of justice in the city of Drow. Alton now sought other means for the solution to his quest. First he had tried the lower planes, the Ice Devil, to disastrous effect. Now Alton had in his possession an item that could end his frustrations. A tome penned by a wizard of the surface world. In the Drow hierarchy, only the clerics of Loth dealt with the realm of the dead. But in other societies, wizards also dabbled into the spirit world. Alton had found the book in the library of Sorcerer and had managed to translate enough of it, he believed, to make a spiritual contact. He wrung his hands together, gingerly opened the book to the marked page, and scanned the incantation one final time. "Are you ready?" he asked Massage. "No." Alton ignored the student's unending sarcasm and placed his hands flat on the table. He slowly sunk into his deepest meditative trance. "Fey Inod." He paused and cleared his throat at the slip. Massage, though he hadn't closely examined the spell, recognized the mistake. "Fey Inunod de Min." Another pause. "Loth be with us," Massage groaned under his breath. Alton's eyes popped wide and he glared at the student. "A translation," he growled, "from the strange language of a human wizard." "Gibberish," Massage retorted. "I have in front of me the private spellbook of a wizard from the surface world," Alton said evenly. "An archmage, according to the scribbling of the orc and thief who stole it and sold it to our agents." He composed himself again and shook his hairless head, trying to return to the depths of his trance. "A simple, stupid orc managed to steal a spellbook from an archmage," Massage whispered rhetorically, letting the absurdity of the statement speak for itself. "The wizard was dead," Alton roared. "The book is authentic." "Who translated it?" Massage replied calmly. Alton refused to listen to any more arguments. Ignoring the smug look on Massage's face, he began again. "Fey Inunod, de Min, de Sul de Ket." Massage faded out and tried to rehearse a lesson from one of his classes, hoping that his sobs of laughter wouldn't disturb Alton. He didn't believe for a moment that Alton's attempt would prove successful, but he didn't want to screw up the fool's line of babbling again and have to suffer through the ridiculous incantation still another time. A short time later, when Massage heard Alton's excited whisper, "Matron Jennifer," he quickly focused his attention back on the events at hand.
Sure enough, an unusual ball of green-hued smoke appeared over the candle's flame and gradually took a more definite shape.
Matron Jennifer,
Alton gasped again when the summons was complete. Hovering before him was the unmistakable image of his dead mother's face. The spirit scanned the room, confused.
Who are you? It asked at length.
I am Alton.
Alton Devere, your son.
Son?
The spirit asked.
Your child. I remember no child so very ugly.
A disguise,
Alton replied quickly, looking back at Massage and expecting a snicker. If Massage had chided and doubted Alton before, he now showed only sincere respect. Smiling, Alton continued,
just a disguise, that I might move about in the city and exact revenge upon our enemies.
What city?
Menzo Berenzon, of course.
Still the spirit seemed not to understand.
You are Jennifer?
Alton pressed.
Matron Jennifer Devere?
The spirit's features contorted into a twisted scowl as it considered the question.
I was, I think.
Matron mother of House Devere, fourth house of Menzo Berenzon,
Alton prompted, growing more excited.
High priestess of Loth.
The mention of the Spider Queen sent a spark through the spirit.
Oh no, it balked.
Jennifer remembered now.
You should not have done this, my ugly son. It is just a disguise, Alton interrupted. I must leave you,
Jennifer's spirit continued, glancing around nervously.
You must release me. But I need some information from you, Matron Jennifer. Do not call me that,
the spirit shrieked.
You do not understand. I am not in Loth's favor.
Trouble, whispered Massage offhandedly, hardly surprised.
Just one answer,
Alton demanded, refusing to let another opportunity to learn his enemy's identity slip past him.
Quickly,
the spirit shrieked.
Name the house that destroyed Devere.
The house?
Jennifer pondered.
Yes, I remember that evil night. It was House...
The ball of smoke puffed and bent out of shape, twisting Jennifer's image and sending her next words out as an indecipherable blurb.
Alton leaped to his feet. No, he screamed. You must tell me. Who are my enemies?
Would you count me as one? The spirit image said, in a voice very different from the one it had used earlier, a tone of sheer power that stole the blood from Alton's face. The image twisted and transformed, became something ugly, uglier than Alton, hideous beyond all experience on the material plane. Alton was not a cleric, of course, and he had never studied the drow religion beyond the basic tenets taught to males of the race. He knew the creature now hovering in the air before him, though, for it appeared as an oozing, slimy stick of melted wax. A yokel, a handmaiden of Loth.
You dare to disturb the torment of Jennifer?
The yokel snarled.
Damn,
whispered Massage, sliding slowly down under the black tablecloth. Even he, with all of his doubts of Alton, had not expected his disfigured mentor to land them in trouble this serious.
But, Alton stuttered,
never again disturb this plane, feeble wizard, the yokel roared.
I did not try for the abyss, Alton protested meekly. I only meant to speak with...
With Jennifer, the yokel snarled. Fallen priestess of Loth! Where would you expect to find her spirit, foolish male? Frolicking in Olympus with the false gods of the surface elves?
I did not think...
Do you ever?
The yokel growled. Nope, Massage answered silently, careful to keep himself as far out of the way as possible.
Never again disturb this plane,
the yokel warned a final time.
The Spider Queen is not merciful, and has no tolerance for meddling males.
The creature's oozing face puffed and swelled, expanding beyond the limits of the smoky ball. Alton heard gurgling, gagging noises, and he stumbled back over his stool, putting his back flat against the wall and bringing his arms up defensively in front of his face. The yokel's mouth opened impossibly wide and spewed forth a hail of small objects. They ricocheted off Alton and tapped against the wall all around him. Stones?
The faceless wizard wondered in confusion. One of the objects then answered his unspoken question. It caught hold of Alton's layered black robes and began crawling up toward his exposed neck. Spiders! A wave of the eight-legged beasts rushed under the little table, sending Massage tumbling out the other side in a desperate roll. He scrambled to his feet and turned back to see Alton slapping and stomping wildly, trying to get out of the main host of the crawling things.
"Do not kill them!" Massage screamed. "To kill spiders is forbidden by the... to the nine hells with the clerics and their laws," Alton shrieked back.
Massage shrugged in helpless agreement, reached around under the folds of his own robes, and produced the same two-handed crossbow he had used to kill the faceless one those years ago. He considered the powerful weapon and the tiny spiders scrambling around the room.
"Overkill?" he asked aloud.
Hearing no answer, he shrugged again and fired. The heavy bolt knifed across Alton's shoulder, cutting a deep line. The wizard stared in disbelief, then turned an ugly grimace on Massage.
"You had one on your shoulder," the student explained.
Alton's scowl did not relent.
"Ungrateful?" Massage snarled. "Foolish Alton, all of the spiders are on your side of the room, remember?"
Massage turned to leave and called,
"Good hunting,"
over his shoulder. He reached for the handle to the door, but as his long fingers closed around it, the portal's surface transformed into the image of Matron Jennifer. She smiled widely, too widely, and an impossibly long and wet tongue reached out and licked Massage across the face.
"Alton!"
he cried, spinning back against the wall out of the slimy member's reach. He noticed the wizard in the midst of spellcasting, Alton fighting to hold his concentration as a host of spiders continued their hungry ascent up his flowing robes.
"You are a dead one," Massage commented matter-of-factly, shaking his head.
Alton fought through the exacting ritual of the spell, ignored his own revulsion of the crawling things, and forced the evocation to completion. In all of his years of study, Alton never would have believed he could do such a thing. He would have laughed at the mere mention of it. Now, however, it seemed a far preferable fate to the Yoklul's creeping doom. He dropped the fireball at his own feet. Naked and hairless, Massage stumbled through the door and out of the inferno. The flaming, faceless master came next, diving into a roll and stripping his tattered and burning robe from his back as he went. As he watched Alton patting out the last of the flames, a pleasant memory flashed in Massage's mind, and he uttered the single lament that dominated his every thought at this disastrous moment.
"I should have killed him when I had him in the web!"
A short time later, after Massage had gone back to his room and his studies, Alton slipped on the ornamental metallic bracers that identified him as a master of the academy and slipped outside the structure of Sorcerer. He moved to the wide and sweeping stairway leading down from Tir Bresh and sat down to take in the sights of Menzo Berenzon. Even with this view, though, the city did little to distract Alton from thoughts of his latest failure. For 16 years he had forsaken all other dreams and ambitions in his desperate search to find the guilty house. For 16 years he had failed. He wondered how long he could keep up the charade and his spirits. Massage, his only friend, if Massage could be called a friend, was more than halfway through his studies at Sorcerer. What would Alton do when Massage graduated and returned to House Hunnet?
"Perhaps I shall carry on my toils for centuries to come," he said aloud, "only to be murdered by a desperate student, as Massage murdered the faceless one. Might that student disfigure himself and take my place?"
Alton couldn't stop the ironic chuckle that passed his lipless mouth at the notion of a perpetual, faceless master of Sorcerer. At what point would the matron mistress of the academy get suspicious? 1,000 years? 10,000? Or might the faceless one outlive Menzo Berenzon itself? Life as a master was not such a bad lot, Alton supposed. Many drow would sacrifice much to be given such an honor. Alton dropped his face into the crook of his elbow and forced away such ridiculous thoughts. He was not a real master, nor did the stolen position bring him any measure of satisfaction. Perhaps Massage should have shot him that day, 16 years ago, when Alton was trapped in the faceless one's web. Alton's despair only deepened when he considered the actual time frame involved. He had just passed his 70th birthday and was still young by drow standards. The notion that only a tenth of his life was behind him was not a comforting one to Alton de Vere this night.
"How long will I survive?" he asked himself. "How long until this madness that is my existence consumes me?"
Alton looked back out over the city.
"Better that the faceless one had killed me," he whispered, "for now I am Alton of no house worth mentioning."
Massage had dubbed him that on the first morning after House de Vere's fall, but way back then, with his life teetering on the edge of a crossbow, Alton had not understood the title's implications. Menzo Berenzon was nothing more than a collection of individual houses. A rogue commoner might latch on to one of them to call his own, but a rogue noble wouldn't likely be accepted by any house in the city. He was left with Sorcere and nothing more, until his true identity was discovered at last. What punishments would he then face for the crime of killing a master? Massage may have committed the crime, but Massage had a house to defend him. Alton was only a rogue noble. He sat back on his elbows and watched the rising heat light of Narbondale. As the minutes became hours, Alton's despair and self-pity went through inevitable change. He turned his attention to the individual drow houses now, not to the conglomeration that bound them as a city, and he wondered what dark secrets each harbored. One of them, Alton reminded himself, held the secret he most dearly wanted to know. One of them had wiped out House de Vere. Forgotten was the knight's failure with Matron Ginefay and the Yawklul. Forgotten was the lament for an early death. 16 years was not so long a time, Alton decided. He had perhaps 7 centuries of life left within his slender frame. If he had to, Alton was prepared to spend every minute of those long years searching for the perpetrating house.
"Vengeance!" he growled aloud, needing, feeding off that audible reminder of his only reason for continuing to draw breath.
8. Kindred. Zack pressed in with a series of low thrusts. Drizzt tried to back away quickly and return to even footing, but the relentless assault followed his every step, and he was forced to keep his movements solely on the defensive. More often than not, Drizzt found the hilts of his weapons closer to Zack than the blades. Zack then dropped into a low crouch and came up under Drizzt's defense. Drizzt twirled his scimitars in a masterful cross, but he had to straighten stiffly to dodge the weapon master's equally deft assault. Drizzt knew that he had been set up, and he fully expected the next attack as Zack shifted his weight to his back leg and dived in, both sword tips aimed for Drizzt's loins. Drizzt spat a silent curse and spun his scimitars into a downward cross, meaning to use the V of his blades to catch his teacher's swords. On a sudden impulse, Drizzt hesitated as he intercepted Zack's weapons, and he jumped away instead, taking a painful slap on the inside of one thigh. Disgusted, he threw both of his scimitars to the floor. Zack, too, leaped back. He held his swords out to his sides, a look of sincere confusion on his face. "You should not have missed that move," he said bluntly. "The parry is wrong," Drizzt replied. Awaiting further explanation, Zack lowered one sword tip to the floor and leaned on the weapon. In past years, Zack had wounded, even killed students for such blatant defiance.
"The crossdown defeats the attack, but to what gain?" Drizzt continued. "When the move is completed, my sword tips remain down too low for any effective attack routine, and you are able to slip back and free. But you have defeated my attack." "Only to face another," Drizzt argued. "The best position I can hope to attain from the crossdown is an even stance."
"Yes?" Zack prompted, not understanding his student's problem with that scenario.
"Remember your own lesson," Drizzt shouted. "Every move should bring an advantage, you preach to me, but I see no advantage in using the crossdown."
"You only recite one part of that lesson for your own purpose," Zack scolded, now growing equally angry.
"Complete the phrase, or use it not at all. Every move should bring an advantage or take away a disadvantage. The crossdown defeats the double thrust blow, and your opponent obviously has gained the advantage if he even attempts such a daring offensive maneuver. Returning to an even stance is far preferable at that moment."
The parry is wrong, Drizzt said stubbornly. Pick up your blades, Zack growled at him, taking a threatening step forward. Drizzt hesitated and Zack charged, his swords leading. Drizzt dropped to a crouch, snatched up the scimitars, and rose to meet the assault, while wondering if it was another lesson or a true attack. The weapons master pressed furiously, snapping off cut after cut and backing Drizzt around in circles. Drizzt defended well enough and began to notice an all-too-familiar pattern as Zack's attacks came consistently lower, again forcing the hilts of Drizzt's weapons up and out over the scimitar's blades. Drizzt understood that Zack meant to prove his point with actions, not words. Seeing the fury on Zack's face, though, Drizzt wasn't certain how far the weapons master would carry his point. If Zack proved correct in his observations, would he strike again to Drizzt's thigh? Or to his heart? Zack came up and under, and Drizzt stiffened and straightened. Double thrust low, the weapons master growled, and his swords dived in. Drizzt was ready for him. He executed the cross down, smiling smugly at the ring of metal as his scimitars crossed over the thrusting swords. Drizzt then followed through with only one of his blades, thinking he could deflect both of Zack's swords well enough in that manner. Now, with one blade free of the parry, Drizzt spun it over in a devious counter. As soon as Drizzt reversed the one hand, Zack saw the ploy, a ruse he had suspected Drizzt would try. Zack dropped one of his own sword tips, the one nearest to the hilt of Drizzt's single parrying blade, to the ground, and Drizzt, trying to maintain an even resistance and balance along the length of the blocking scimitar, lost his balance. Drizzt was quick enough to catch himself before he had stumbled too far, though his knuckles pinched into the stone of the floor. He still believed that he had Zack caught in his trap and that he could finish his brilliant counter. He took a short step forward to regain his full balance. The weapons master dropped straight down to the floor under the arc of Drizzt's swinging scimitar and spun a single circuit, driving his booted heel into the back of Drizzt's exposed knee. Before Drizzt had even realized the attack, he found himself lying flat on his back. Zack abruptly broke his own momentum and threw his feet back under him. Before Drizzt could begin to understand the dizzying counter-counter, he found the weapons master standing over him, with the tip of Zack's sword painfully and pointedly drawing a tiny drop of blood from his throat. "Have you anything more to say?" Zack growled. "The parry is wrong," Drizzt answered. Zack's laughter erupted from his belly. He threw his sword to the ground, reached down, and pulled the stubborn young student to his feet. He calmed quickly, his gaze finding that of Drizzt's lavender orbs as he pushed the student out to arm's length. Zack marveled at the ease of Drizzt's stance, the way he held the twin scimitars almost as if they were a natural extension of his arms. Drizzt had been in training only a few months, but already he had mastered the use of nearly every weapon in the vast armory of House Doerden. Those scimitars! Drizzt's chosen weapons, with curving blades that enhanced the dizzying flow of the young fighter's sweeping battle style. With those scimitars in hand, this young drow, barely more than a child, could outfight half the members of the academy, and a shiver tingled through Zack's spine when he pondered just how magnificent Drizzt would become after years of training. It was not just the physical abilities and potential of Drizzt O'Erden that made Zack Nafane pause and take note, however. Zack had come to realize that Drizzt's temperament was indeed different from that of the average drow. Drizzt possessed a spirit of innocence and lacked any maliciousness. Zack couldn't help but feel proud when he looked upon Drizzt. In all manners, the young drow held to the same principles, morals so unusual in Menzo Baranzon, as Zack. Drizzt had recognized the connection as well, though he had no idea of how unique his and Zack's shared perceptions were in the evil drow world. He realized that Uncle Zack was different from any of the other dark elves he had come to know, though that included only his own family and a few dozen of the house soldiers. Certainly Zack was much different